Thank you so much for inviting me to this terribly important conference. And I know why I was invited, and that is because I'm from San Diego, which is where General Atomics is located. And General Atomics makes the Predator and Reaper drones. So I think I'm eminently qualified to speak at the conference. In his 2009 acceptance speech for the Nobel Peace Prize, President Barack Obama declared, "Where force is necessary, we have a moral and strategic interest in binding ourselves to certain rules of conduct. And even as we confront a vicious adversary that abides by no rules, I believe the United States of America must remain a standard bearer in the conduct of war." By the time Obama accepted the award, 1 year into his presidency, he had ordered more drone strikes than George W. Bush had authorized during his two presidential terms. The Bush administration detained and tortured suspected terrorists. The Obama administration has chosen to illegally assassinate them, often with the use of drones. The continued indefinite detention of men at Guantanamo belies Obama's pledge 2 days after his first inauguration to close the prison camp there. However, Obama has added only one detainee to the Guantanamo roster. According to John Bellinger, who formulated the Bush administration's drone policy, "This government has decided that instead of detaining members of Al-Qaeda at Guantanamo, they are going to kill them." In 1976, President Gerald Ford issued an executive order banning political assassinations. It said no person employed by or acting on behalf of the U.S. government shall engage in or conspire to engage in assassination. And yet assassination is central to U.S. war strategy with the militarization of our foreign policy. By classifying terrorism as an act of war rather than a crime, the Bush administration claimed it was no longer bound by its legal obligation to provide due process. Killing is more convenient than capture, and this killing takes place with drone strikes, assassinations by special forces, etc. Osama bin Laden could have been captured and brought back and tried. Everyone was unarmed when the special forces arrived. And when people ask me about, well, these terrorists are horrible, they want to do us harm, why should we worry about due process? I remind them that after the Holocaust, after World War II, the victorious powers got together to decide what to do with the Nazi leaders. And Winston Churchill said, just take them out in the backyard and kill them all. And to his credit, Justice Robert Jackson, who had taken a leave from the U.S. Supreme Court to be chief U.S. prosecutor at Nuremberg, said no. If we do not provide due process, even to the Nazi leaders, and no one in the history of the world has committed, well, I don't want to say the history of the world because I'm not an ancient historian, but I can't think of anyone who has committed worse crimes than the Nazis. He says, if we do not provide due process, even to these Nazi leaders, we will be passing a poison chalice to future generations. The Cold War converted war into a global battlefield. CIA covert operations took place in foreign countries against communism. And we had what was called the Salvador option at the end of the Cold War, where the United States sent CIA and special forces to create, arm, finance, and assassinate, teams and death squads to assassinate while avoiding U.S. casualties and avoiding public opposition to U.S. ground troops. With the deck of cards during the Bush administration, which were during Operation Iraqi, so-called Iraqi Freedom, the 52 top wanted Iraqis, assassination became a key component of U.S. war strategy. Targeted killing against someone not convicted of a crime is an extrajudicial crime outside of any legal process, and it violates both international human rights law and international humanitarian law. In my book, and I'm not touting it because I don't think there's any copies left to buy, but you can always buy it on Amazon if you want. It's a collection of essays by different people. It's called Drones and Targeted Killing. It's right up the alley of this conference. One of the writers in the book is an Israeli named Ishai Mnuchin, who was one of the original refuseniks from the Lebanon War. He's the executive director of PCADI, the Public Committee Against Torture in Israel. And in his chapter, he says that assassination is sometimes sanitized with euphemisms such as targeted preemption, preemptive preemption, extrajudicial punishment, or targeted killing, suggesting that the assassination has hindered a bad event. It was just surgical punishment or a military operation. And in the United States, we call them surgical strikes. You just go in and get that little tumor and come right out, and it's great. Despite, and this is Mnuchin, despite the hesitance of Israel to use capital punishment, assassination has been a covert military practice for many years. And he says that Israel also uses assassination as revenge or to deter or send a political message. Also in the book is an essay by Richard Falk from Princeton. He is emeritus from Princeton, was here for many, many years. And he says, or he wrote, until the Cheney-Rumsfeld embrace of secret war by assassination, the United States didn't follow Israel's adoption of terror to fight terror, which had evolved from the shadows of Israeli policy to an outright avowal of legality in 2000 after years of disavowal. Until the leak of the Department of Justice white paper in 2013 saying that US citizens could be targeted, Americans weren't too concerned about the targeted killing of foreigners. And for one thing, it's sanitized in the media. We don't hear the stories of the drone victims. We don't see the images of what our drone bombs do. But when this white paper was leaked, people were very outraged. Rand Paul mounted a 13-hour filibuster of John Bellinger's nomination to be CIA director. And this motivated Archbishop Desmond Tutu to write a letter to the editor in the New York Times where he said, are you trying to say that American lives are more valuable than our lives? And when I saw that letter, I decided that I wanted Archbishop Tutu to write a foreword to the book, which he did, and he elaborates on that whole issue of American exceptionalism. And we hear that a lot. We hear it from Obama, we heard it in the State of the Union address, America is exceptional. We're better than everyone else, and that justifies whatever we have to do to make sure that we remain on top, number one, the world's leader. This Department of Justice white paper said that consent makes a lethal operation in a foreign nation legal. So if Pakistan or Yemen or Somalia consent, then it's legal. But UN Special Rapporteurs Philip Alston and Christopher Hines have said that consent does not absolve either of the concerned states of their obligations to abide by international human rights and international humanitarian law. A state cannot consent to a violation of international law. The Department of Justice white paper said that lawful killing in self-defense is not an assassination, that a lethal operation against a U.S. citizen whose conduct poses an imminent threat a violent attack against the United States would be a legitimate act of national self-defense and would not violate the assassination ban. So this imminence, what is imminence? Well, under the Caroline case, imminence means the necessity for self-defense must be instant, overwhelming, leaving no choice of means and no moment for deliberation. But the white paper says that a US citizen can be killed even where there is no clear evidence that a specific attack on US persons and interests will take place in the immediate future, unquote. So what does imminence mean? Now, we hear a lot about how, well, drones minimize civilian casualties. This is one of the reasons it's Obama's weapon of choice, that and that Americans don't get killed. But a study based on classified military data conducted by the Center for Naval Analyses and the Center for Civilians in Conflict found that the use of drones in Afghanistan had caused 10 times more civilian deaths than manned fighter aircraft. I want to say a few words about the morality of drone strikes that are not conducted during armed conflict. The Martins Clause from the Hague Conventions requires that a means of warfare be evaluated in terms of the principles of humanity and the dictates of public conscience. Jeff McMahon has written that targeted killing by drones of terrorists planning wrongful attacks is morally similar to the killing of aggressor combatants who are asleep, the sleeping soldier, who is a future threat but not a present threat. It's like treachery, which is prohibited by the Hague Convention, poison weapons prohibited by the Hague Convention. Not all's fair in war. I don't know about love, I'm not an expert on that. But as Professor Waldron said, Kant condemned assassinations, poisons, and lying in wait. Harry van der Linden, who's the philosopher who writes about just war principles in the book, talks about drones as deadly surveillance platforms. He says a drone killing is not like a surprise attack on a sleeping soldier. Rather, the drone operator is like a soldier standing in the closet of a sleeping enemy soldier, watching him tossing and turning, going to the bathroom, getting a smoke, falling back to sleep. And then after many hours, the soldier steps outside the closet and pulls the trigger. And the enemy soldier had some sense of being watched. The sound of drones may be heard overhead. But being unable to verify his suspicions, he fell into a restless sleep, never fully knowing what hit him. By the time the hissing sounds of missiles are heard by their victims, the deadly impact is only seconds away. There has been reference to the targeted killing of Batila Masood, a senior Pakistani Taliban, on August 5, 2009. After the drone watched him for several hours, he was finally killed on the rooftop of his father-in-law's home. And at the moment of the strike, Masood was receiving dialysis from kidney disease. Also present were his father-in-law, his mother-in-law, his second wife, and seven bodyguards. All killed. It was as wrong to kill him as it is to kill mourners at a funeral. There's been reference to the double tap, where we go in, a drone strike, a drone bomb hits, some people are killed, some people are wounded. The rescuers go in to pick up the wounded, and then the rescuers are droned and killed. And then it really should be called a triple tap, because then when they go to the funerals to mourn their dead, then there's a third strike, the triple tap. Harry van der Linden said, what seems to make drone killings at times morally deeply problematic is that the operators become familiar with the targets as a person. Watch his everyday life, his home, even his family, and then the kill occurs. Thus, it seems that a person is killed rather than a combatant or a human with hostile intention. Michael Walser talked about the naked soldier cases in the just war tradition and gave some examples. During World War II, a sniper sees through a telescope a German soldier taking a bath and decides not to shoot him. During the Spanish Civil War, George Orwell refrained from shooting an enemy soldier running while trying to keep up his pants. And during World War I, an Italian soldier refrained from shooting Austrian soldiers who were drinking their morning coffee and enjoying a smoke. Van der Linden says the extreme asymmetric killing, as it is currently practiced by the U.S., cannot be separated from the colonialist, racist, and imperialist symmetric killing of the recent past. Uwe Steinhoff wrote, those black, yellow, or brown people might therefore have a somewhat different perspective on the alleged advantages by drones. They might think that it is bad enough to be treated like the barbarian enemies, but still worse, to be treated like cockroaches on the receiving side of pest control. In 2009, when Jane Mayer wrote an essay in The New Yorker, and it was called The Predator War, it's reprinted in the book. And it was the first comprehensive expose of the U.S. drone program. And Jane Mayer interviewed Vicki DeVall, who was a former CIA lawyer who now teaches at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis. And Vicki DeVall said, "People are a lot more comfortable with a predator strike that kills many people than with a throat slitting that kills one." And sure enough, when we heard about the horrific throat slitting, beheading, of the two American journalists by ISIS, there was hardly a peep when Obama said, "I'm going to start new wars and extend my war in Iraq and start a new war in Syria," and everybody said, "Great." But we don't see the pictures of the children blown up with drones, their arms there, their legs there, their head there. If we did, just like we did during the Vietnam War, remember that iconic photo of the 9-year-old girl running naked from a U.S. bomber that had just dropped napalm all over her. And that was the moment that I became a lifelong anti-war activist when I saw that picture. They're very, very powerful, these images. It's been said that the war on terror is a misnomer, and it is a misnomer. Terrorism is a tactic. It's not an enemy. You don't declare war on a tactic. And yet, under the guise of the so-called war on terror, the Bush administration, and to a certain extent also the Obama administration, has shredded the Constitution. There will be no accountability. Accountability will be the only way that will deter future presidents and future administrations from committing the war crimes. And when I say war crimes, I include torture, which is a war crime. Many of you have read this summary of the Senate torture report, which is horrific. I've been writing about torture for years, books and articles. Nothing prepared me for that report. Rectal rehydration and the things that we do to other human beings. And yet Obama said we have to look forward, not backward. These things happen in the past. Well, crimes always happen in the past by the time they get prosecuted. And he refuses to bring these war criminals to justice. And I'm talking about the, you know, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rice, the legal mercenaries, John Yoo, Jay Bybee, et cetera, and the CIA directors and the Department of Justice, the attorneys general. And perhaps one day there will be the next Senate report on drones, and then Obama could conceivably be prosecuted as a war criminal, if not in this country, then in other countries under universal jurisdiction or in the International Criminal Court, although there are some jurisdictional issues there. After 9/11, it really baffled me how 19 men could commit suicide and take 3,000 innocents with them. I just could not understand it. It certainly was not our democracy they were objecting to, or they would have aimed at the Statue of Liberty. So I went and read what Osama bin Laden had written, and I'm no fan of Osama bin Laden's, mind you. And there were three pet peeves that Osama bin Laden had. First of all was the presence of foreign infidels, U.S. troops, in the holy Muslim sites of Mecca and Medina in Saudi Arabia. Secondly, was the killing of 1 million Iraqis, half of them children, by the sanctions that were backed by the U.S., specifically Bill Clinton. And the third was Israel's treatment of the Palestinians. Until we completely reassess our foreign policy, we will never be safe from terrorism. And that means refraining from illegally invading other countries, killing their people, torturing their people, illegally occupying their lands, uncritically supporting other countries that illegally occupy other people's lands. Until we do that, everything else is band-aids. We will never be safe from terrorism. We will always be vulnerable to terrorist attacks. Thank you.